Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hope you've enjoyed the show so far. If you haven't, check it out on our podcast on stevejonesshow.com. Our thanks to Pete Jensen from NHL.com, who joined us in the opening half hour. Pete talking about the Penguins, the Flyers, and the NHL in general right now. And our thanks to him. Second half hour, college basketball, national perspective from our good friend Adam Amin from ESPN, who called the Kentucky-Missouri game last night, so he has had a chance to watch the nation's number one team in person. Our thanks to him. Coming up in just a few moments, my broadcast partner for the last 11 seasons on the Penn State Sports Network, Dick Girardi. We'll talk about Nittany Lion basketball, also college basketball in general with the Hall of Famer himself, who was inducted into the U.S. Basketball Writers Association Hall of Fame back in April, for the great work he's done for decades at the Philadelphia Daily News. In our final half hour, another old friend, Wayne Larrivee, the play-by-play voice of the Green Bay Packers, is going to join us to talk about the Super Bowl and other topics. Wayne also had the privilege on Westwood One of calling Mike Krzyzewski's 1,000th career win at Madison Square Garden on Sunday. We'll talk to Wayne about that and also about the Packers and also about the Seahawks and the Patriots. He saw the Seahawks just 12 days ago. He saw the Patriots about 6 weeks ago. So he'll be able to bring that perspective to the table. You need to gear up, though, for the Super Bowl, which means you need to gear up for your Super Bowl party, whether you're going, because you don't want to walk in empty-handed, or whether you're hosting. There is only one suggestion I have that is going to make sure it's a success either way. That is going to Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. You want to make sure you have the best selection in imports, domestics, and microbrews. You want to go someplace that also has a wide selection of soft drinks. You want to go to a place that has a wide selection of snacks. You want to go to a place that has not only peanuts, but a place that roasts the peanuts fresh and hot every day, and a pickle bar that is second to none. Well, that's all in one-stop shopping, my friends. That is Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Kevin turned in his car today. Another new vehicle to drive, which we will touch on and talk about as we move along. Time now to bring in someone, you know, and I've told people this. I've told my class for a long time. Never be afraid to work with people that make you better. And I have been so fortunate in every stop I've had, whether it's working with Kevin on this show or whether it's been working with Jack Ham or working with Dick Girardi. I've always been surrounded by people that you can debate how much better I am, but I know I am. I'm so much better off for have worked by working with them. And it's been a privilege. Dick, my friend, welcome. It is great to have you back with us.
Steve, what's happening?
If I knew, I'd tell you. Penn State is an interesting team in that they've played some games where they played pretty well, didn't win. Last night, found a way to win. In the end, that probably, you know, it's just the winning part that matters. But what are you seeing from this team that actually shows something, some level of progress?
I think clearly better, the best team that Pat's had in his 3.5 seasons now. So you're just looking for progress, Steve, and I think that's what they've showed. And the fact that they could win last night without one of their best players says for the first time Pat actually has depth where he can go to the bench and it's not a gigantic drop-off. In fact, last night it was obviously a huge help because everybody who came into the game contributed, and some more than others.
Peyton Banks had 9, you mentioned, off the bench. Julian Moore looked like he was going to have a pretty good night till he hit some foul trouble. And you also have a guy like Devin Foster, who's a junior, but they're all new players to this lineup. What are you seeing from each of those guys that impresses you to this point?
Well, Devin Foster's been a revelation. Obviously, we didn't get a chance to see him at all early in the season because he was just trying to – they were trying to figure out what his role was, and he was trying to get acclimated to Division I basketball. But since he's gotten run here in the last several games, Steve, he's been really, really good. And I'm thinking, was Michigan State the first game where he really got a lot of run? Is that, that's my memory of it.
Yeah, he got some in that. And, of course, the Purdue game, he played the first half of that game, the first half of the Purdue game.
And he looked good in that game, and obviously he's been very – so he's really helped. Jordan Dickerson, who obviously had an impact last night, Steve, this is really – he's not quite finished his first full season because he only came up at halfway last year, so maybe once he played like 35 games or so. So he's still figuring it all out. Peyton Banks took a red shirt. He can shoot, and he's big, and he's starting to learn how to play the whole game. So, yeah, I mean, everybody they put out there it was really good last night. And you mentioned Julian. He took a red shirt last year. Now getting some run. Looks like he has potential to be a good player. So little by little, the program is being built up. It's 14-7. Were there a couple games left out there? Yeah, probably. But that's just the nature of the sport. Did they steal a game against Cornell and in Charleston? Absolutely. So it works both ways.
Right. It does work both ways. DJ Newbill, one thing I always find interesting is that when a guy transfers, sometimes the school ignores what they've done before. I was looking at Ravonte Rice. I mean, they only put down what he's done at Illinois. I'm going, he had a life before that. Newbill's on the cusp of 2,000 points in his career. Dick, what kind of development have you seen in him that has made him into this kind of player?
Well, he came as a scorer, and Steve, he's made himself into a passer, a shooter. And last night, I thought it was one of the best defensive efforts he's had since he's been at Penn State. He was in the middle of a lot of plays. Certainly, he was huge on rebounding, getting a double-double on a night where he didn't shoot well. So, yeah, he's developed his whole game, and he's going to make money playing basketball somewhere after this year. And that's what you want. You just want to see a guy who's gotten better. He's a great teammate. Everybody loves him. He's obviously the leader of the team. He's the best player. He's going to be a first-team All-Big Ten player. And given what happened to him out of high school when he was signed, sealed, and delivered for Marquette until the coach changed his mind, he's obviously had a tremendous career at 2,000 points. Steve, only three players active in Division I right now with 2,000 points. It's just become a hard number to get because obviously the sensational players don't stay in school that long, and scoring is down so much around the sport. So that's going to be a night of celebration when DJ gets his 2,000, and he's certainly going to get there sometime here in the next month.
You're right. No question about that. They also did something with him interesting. Pat's done some interesting things of late. The way he used the switching by Michigan State against them to find some offense, using DJ the way he did last night in the teeth of the zone. How interested have you been by the subtle slices of strategy that have opened a couple of things up?
You know I love that stuff. We talk about it during the games, and it's just fun to watch. And last night, they didn't think a whole lot of the middle of Minnesota's zone, and they said, all right, well, who are we going to use in there as the ball mover? Somebody who can catch it, make good decisions, maybe shoot if necessary. And they came up with their shooting guard. DJ Newbill is a guy who can do all of those things, and he was the ball mover against the zone, and he made all those plays that opened up the shots for everybody else in the first half. And actually made Richard Pitino have to abandon the zone at halftime because Penn State had solved it. They were just, I think if they had stayed the zone, I think Penn State would have won the game by 20.
You made a comment, Dick, about scoring being down. And through the first 1,000 games of a year ago, they really took it up to, about December 15th or so, John Adams wanted to see how things were working out, and scoring had gone up. Now they've reverted back on certain things. What if I gave you some power here to say, look, change the game, and if you do it this way, it's going to be a more entertaining game for people to watch. What would those elements be?
Well, probably the first thing would maybe even move the restraining circle where you can't take a charge out even farther, Steve, because unfortunately, the charge has become the default call again. And I think if you brought the add one back into the game, then I think that obviously would increase scoring. It would make offensive players a little more daring. I think a lot of them are scared to go running to the basket because they're afraid somebody's going to fall down. They're going to get called for a charge. This is going to sound radical, but I've advocated this for years. I would get rid of the foul out rule. I think it's the only sport that there is where you accumulate fouls and you're out of the game. It doesn't happen in any other sport. If somebody's just out there trying to hurt people, just throw them out of the game. You can't have that. I never have understood the whole five foul thing. It doesn't make any sense. I know it's not going to change because it's been that way forever. But if you look at the original James Naismith rules, there's nothing about that. It just evolved over time, and I think it's a mistake. And I think that brings offense back into the game because the best players are on the court the whole time. There's a number of other things. I just think the skill level of today's player isn't as good as it used to be. And that problem obviously stems from the fact that a lot of the best players aren't playing college basketball anymore. Not much you can do about that. That's not going to change. But I think just call a foul. It's become too physical. If the games have to take a little longer for people to understand that, then they're going to have to take a little longer. But it's just too rough. You look at the NBA game versus the college game. NBA game is a much more pure game, freedom of movement. It's a better game than the college game is right now. So I think that's a problem.
Conference that sticks out to you at this point that may be playing at a high level because they have a depth of good teams, that would be which one?
I think the Big 12 probably has the most good teams. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it has any team that's going to win the national championship. Kansas is leading right now. I don't know that they're necessarily a contender. They're really good, but I don't know that they're among the, say, 10 best teams in the country at the moment. Yeah, they probably have the best teams. I think the ACC probably has the most really, really good teams. They probably have four or five teams that you could say they get hot in March and April, they could all end up in Indianapolis.
It's going to be an intriguing game coming up that may be under the radar across the country, but I think would be well worth watching. And I know we share this opinion. Northern Iowa and Wichita State. Give everyone an indication why that one is well worth watching across the country.
If you want to watch beautifully coached basketball, high IQ players, and a game with a lot at stake, because the game will be at Northern Iowa, and nobody's been able to beat Wichita in the Missouri Valley now in a season and a half, that game on Saturday will absolutely be worth watching. I don't know what channel it's on. I assume it's on somewhere since everything is on everywhere anymore. But yeah, I know Virginia Duke is Saturday. That'll obviously be interesting. But for me, I want to see Wichita and Northern Iowa. Because those are two teams that will be in the tournament, and obviously, we know Wichita is capable of going a long way, and I think Northern Iowa is one of those kind of teams, too, that could easily hit the second weekend.
You mentioned Duke, Virginia. For those who have not seen Virginia, what are they missing?
Well, they're missing the obvious, which is no worse than the second-best defense in the country. And it's not just because they keep teams under 30, it's how they do it. They just don't give up anything. They're going to make you shoot over them, and every shot's going to be contested. It's not the most exciting brand of ball because I think the only team that plays slower than they do in the country is American, but it's very effective. And if you watch their offense, it's just it's not Wisconsin exactly, but it's got some of those elements in that eventually you get tired of just chasing people around and watching 17 passes, and you go, all right, I'm tired of watching passes. I'll leave my man wide open and I'll hit a 12-footer. That will happen, but they're beautifully efficient at both ends. They're top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency. People forget they're the defending ACC regular season and tournament champions from a year ago. They made the Sweet 16, lost to Michigan State, but you could tell they were on the cusp of doing something. If you said to me right now, who's the coach of the year, it's Tony Bennett.
In fact, I think you talk about what he's doing down there. I think the reason there's some things that are very similar to what his dad did, Dick Bennett, at Wisconsin, certainly those elements, but I also think he inherited a better caliber of athlete than his dad did at Wisconsin. Fair enough?
Say that last thing again, Steve.
I said I think he inherited and then has built a better caliber of athlete in his program. That's why that's a little difference, the difference between what he has now and what his dad had at Wisconsin.
Right. I'll disagree with one part of the statement. I don't know that he inherited a lot of talent. I remember we were down there a couple of years ago. Right. That wasn't a particularly great team. But over time, he has gotten talent in there, which is obviously recruiting.
Right.
They got big-time players. They got NBA players on that roster. They had one last year, and they have a couple on this year's team. So from that standpoint, absolutely. Those Wisconsin teams overachieved. That team that made the Final Four was a complete miracle. That was flat-out great coaching.
Yeah, and believe me, yeah, and they called it football on wood. I mean, they took that thing. What was it? What was that game? 19-18 in halftime with Michigan State? You were at that game.
It was brutal. It was in Indianapolis. It was funny because Michigan State played Florida for the championship and ran them out of the gym, and everybody said after that game, oh, they can't win. I said, forget that. This game's going to be different. Florida wants to run up and down the court. That's what Michigan State and Mateen Cleaves and Mo Pete wanted to do. So they were fine. But yeah, I think 1918 does sound right. It was not very watchable. I do remember that Saturday night semifinal game.
That's where the word brutal comes up.
I think. It set the game back a ways. People actually were talking about rule changes after that season. But that was kind of an aberration. But look, that was the only way they could win at that level, so that's how they played. They weren't going to go out and try to beat you 85 to 82 because they weren't going to be able to score 85.
I will see you tonight. Appreciate it.
I will look forward to it, my man.
All right.
Dick and I will be flying to Illinois tonight game at Champaign-Urbana coming up tomorrow, which we're looking forward to. But, you know, there's a couple things that, you know, and that Dick pointed out, and it goes to strategy. And I was going to talk about this yesterday, and then we got sidetracked on NASCAR and Danica Patrick and side bets in the Super Bowl and so forth. But, you know, I always get interested to hear him say, oh, he's a lousy coach. He can't coach, the whole thing. And of course, it's very easy to make blanket statements and have no responsibility whatsoever to back them up. Well, let's talk for a moment about coaching. And let's talk about three of the last four games that Penn State's played. I think when you look at the Rutgers game, I think the key there was the defensive strategy and how they were able to switch out. But you look at the last four games as to what they've done. They played Indiana, and they knew darn well that if they took the ball and drove it down Indiana's throat, Indiana defensively couldn't handle it. And that's how that ended up being a three-point game. That atmosphere was a very tough atmosphere to play in, which Maryland, which is really a good basketball team, found out point blank when they went in there to play. And I think that that's something where and Penn State, that was their strategy. The problem was they shot too many threes in that game, and that's something Patrick Chambers did not want, that when they were doing what they had to do, they had 45 points in the paint in that game. Now you switch it out and you go to the Michigan State game. The Michigan State game was a game where Penn State did a great job of locking down the outside game for the most part of Michigan State till finally they hit a couple of threes late. But offensively, they went from high ball screen and attracting a second guy out there, which then really clogged things up, to then changing it and scrapping it over the final 35 minutes and going with a system that tried to take the matchups that Michigan State wanted to create and use it against them, because Michigan State wants to switch all the time on defense. So what Patrick Chambers did was he used the switches against them to create the mismatches he wanted. Travis Trice guarding Brandon Taylor in the post, getting DJ Newbill one-on-one 18 feet from the basket against Brandon Dawson. Dawson, when he's 5, 6, 7 feet from the basket, wow, that's a tough matchup. You bring him out to 18 feet where your quickness and the ability to get past him comes into play, now you've created something, and Dawson struggled with that all night. Takes a little longer on the shot clock to make that happen, but they did. Then you see what they did in the Rutgers game, how they played defense and switching the way they did on defense that really threw Rutgers way off, and then the change they made where they would get past the first wave and instead of challenging all the way to the basket, taking, drawing, and then kicking out for a better shot. Now you look at last night's game. Last night's game may have been the best of all in terms of how they coached it up. And, of course, execution means everything. But how they coached it up in that particular game last night. They took DJ Newbill, and Dick just touched on this a few moments ago. And against that 2-3 zone, you always need to attack a 2-3 zone right around that foul line elbow area. That's the vulnerable area of a 2-3 zone. Usually you'll take a big man and put him in that spot. Penn State didn't do that last night. They put DJ Newbill there, knowing the teams tilt their defense toward him, and he's a good enough passer. And it really wrecked what Minnesota wanted to do, to the point where Richard Pitino had to get out of that 2-3 zone, which is their base defense, and go man-to-man, because if they had stayed in the 2-3, I'll be frank with you, I think Penn State would have won the game by 15 to 20 points last night. So when people talk about coaching, I listen to people, I try not to bristle, but at the same time, I've been around this thing a long time. I know when I see good coaching and why I see good coaching. Not making a blanket statement, actually explaining why I think it's good coaching, specifically. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Don't show up empty-handed to a Super Bowl party. If you're hosting one, you got to go to Brewers Outlet for the best in imports, domestics, and microbrews. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Next half hour, Wayne Larrabee, the play-by-play voice of the Packers, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back, and it's the home stretch of today's show. What a fun show it's been, at least for me so far. Pete Jensen from NHL.com joined us in the opening part of the show today to talk about the Pens, the Flyers, the NHL making the turn into February. Then we were joined by Adam Amin from ESPN. Talked a lot of college basketball, Maryland, Indiana, Kentucky, Wichita State, Northern Iowa, Virginia, Duke. That was in the second half hour. Last half hour, also same thing, wide range view of college basketball with Dick Girardi, but also short term talking about Penn State basketball. And the Nittany Lions tomorrow will take on Illinois at 1 o'clock. That will be at the Allstate Center in Champaign, looking for their third consecutive win. Coming up in a few moments, we'll be joined by Wayne Larrabee, the play-by-play voice of the Green Bay Packers. We will talk about Super Bowl 49. Which Sunday will have the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. He will bring an interesting view to the table because, obviously, just 12 days ago, he announced the Seahawks-Packers game in the NFC Championship game. And 6 weeks ago, up at Lambeau, he had the Patriots and the Packers as well. So he'll talk about that and much more. And a little slice of history they announced on Sunday because he was part of the broadcast crew for Westwood One when Mike Krzyzewski won the 1,000th game of his career. Get ready for that Super Bowl party by stocking up ASAP at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Corey and the gang will have everything ready for you because you want to make sure that when you go to your Super Bowl party, you do not show up empty-handed. You'll be the one they invite back repeatedly because you will bring the best. Or if you're hosting a Super Bowl party, you want to make sure you are fully stocked and set to go with the best of imports, domestics, microbrews. What a selection Brewers Outlet has. Soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And, of course, the pickle bar is second to none. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We are in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, let's get to the Super Bowl now. Among other things, in our business, I consider him to be one of the best ever, top echelon. And whether it's the Big Ten Network, for years working with the Chicago Bears, for years doing games with the Chicago Bulls, now working for Westwood One, and primarily as the play-by-play voice of the Green Bay Packers, Wayne Larrivee. Wayne, welcome. It is great to hear you again, my friend.
Steve, good to talk to you. How have you been?
I'm doing well. How have you been?
Good.
All right. You had a slice of history on Sunday because you were there for Westwood with Steve Lapis for Mike Krzyzewski's 1,000th. Just to be courtside for that, and especially post-game courtside as he made his rounds, talk about the scene.
You know, it was, I guess, appropriate that it would happen at Madison Square Garden, you know, because that is the mecca of basketball, in my opinion. And, you know, it was great that he had, there was some symmetry to it in that he passed Bob Knight, winning 903 to become the all-time winningest head coach in Division I history in that venue with a victory over Michigan State. And then, you know, reached that 1,000 plateau in the same building. So there was a little symmetry there. It was really neat to see. It was kind of a ragged game back and forth. But, you know, his team, I think the way they won, it's not just that they won, but the way they won maybe excited him as much as reaching 1,000.
Obviously, a lot of people have seen Kentucky play this year, and they've seen, obviously, not as much, but some of Virginia. How good do you think Duke is? Now you've seen them in person, their athleticism, the speed, how they play the game. How good are they?
Well, they're not very deep. They're maybe six or seven really strong players deep, and then there's some drop-off there. But the players they have are very good. You know, Okafor is one of the most polished big men for a freshman I've ever seen, you know, in terms of his footwork, his feel for the game, his passing acumen out of a double team on the post. He's really outstanding. You know, when you look at Tyus Jones, I mean, he hit the big shot in the corner, out of the corner, to basically seal the game the other day. He's just a freshman, but a point guard who plays well beyond his years. And, you know, I think they've got some good young talent. The one thing they don't have a lot of is experience, but they've got a couple of kids. Suleiman's been around for a while, and I think this Quinn Cook is maybe the key to their team because he's a senior, he's been a point guard, and when they put him and Jones on the floor at the same time, not only do you have two outstanding ball handlers, but you have two free throw shooters shooting at about 90%.
All right, Seattle gets New England this week. The Packers were on the cusp of this thing. Discuss the emotions, Wayne, of how that turned out in the end for Green Bay. What were the emotions like, and is it tough to get over, especially if you're a player?
Yeah, you know, I think it's tough for everybody to get over. The players actually might be a little more resilient than most. You know, I think it's going to be really tough on the front office and coaching staff and certainly the fans. The players do have a little more resilience about them, I think, in handling a situation like that. But no doubt, it'll take some tender, loving care when they get back into the off-season program and into the mini camps and into training camp next year. This will have to be dealt with, and it'll be interesting to see how it is dealt with because these things can linger. They can carry over. I'm a great believer that every season is a new season. Every team's a new team. But you're going to have a lot of guys who went through that on this team next year. And so how Mike McCarthy handles that behind closed doors will go a long way to determining whether this team can get over that. The bottom line is this. You know, Steve, we talk about windows of opportunity.
Yeah.
And really, they're only one-year windows of opportunity. You get a team that has enough talent. You get a team that's healthy enough. You get a team that's playing well enough at the right time of year to win it all. And the Packers are one of three teams this year that had a chance to do that, Seattle being another one, New England being the other. Denver would have been in that group, but their quarterback all of a sudden became 60. So, right. You know, they fell out of it. And by the way, the Colts, and I hate to say this to Colts fans, they had no business being in that game in New England, the AFC Championship game. That was a sham. But, you know, aside from that, there were three teams that have a chance to go all the way. Two of them are still alive. The Packers were right there on the verge, and that's what's very hard. You know you're good enough. You know, in the end, they may be better than Seattle, but they didn't get it done, and Seattle's in it.
Aaron Rodgers had to go through the end of the season and with the calf injury. How much do you have a lot of respect for him to begin with.
How much did your respect grow as you watch him fight through this and sometimes just make literally arm throws and not body throws?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, his character is unquestioned, at least around here and at least in that locker room, and the way he played through that injury. But, you know, the first time, when he was a first-year starter in 2008, suffered a shoulder injury on the road, and we came back to play a game against Atlanta the week after. And there was all this question as to whether he'd be able to go out and play, and would the doctors let him play, and he eventually convinced them that morning of the game to go out and play. He played a heck of a ball game with a shoulder injury, and this was in 2008. The Packers ended up losing the game, but not because of him, and that's where he really engendered the kind of respect in that locker room that has permeated to this day. And so to see him do that down the stretch, I think his teammates certainly really appreciated it. It was a big part of it, but, you know, the thing that it took away was his ability to extend plays and threaten the defense at times if he took off and just ran with the football. It took that out of his arsenal, but just being a pure pocket passer, he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the league, so a very talented kid.
There were 61 block kicks in the NFL this year. Seven happened to be, unfortunately, at the hands of the Packers. How surprised were you at that as this went along, as the season played out?
The Packers in the last 2 years showed me two things I've never seen covering the NFL for 37 years. Last year, their safeties, the entire group of safeties, went through a whole football season without one interception. That was last year. Right. And this year, I've never seen a team on any level have seven kicks blocked in a year. You know, you had a field goal blocked, you had two extra points blocked, you had three punts blocked. My gosh, it was like, you know, you kept waiting for that to blow up in a game. And, you know, hey, I'd like to sit here and tell you that special teams struggled because they had a bevy of injuries, and you know how injuries trickle down to special teams because somebody gets pulled up into a starting capacity and is no longer able to play on the teams. Well, that wasn't the case. The Packers had their healthiest season, and I can't remember when. This year they had one or two injuries of note, and that was about it. So it was really perplexing, and they put a lot of time into it, Steve. They really do.
Wayne, you saw the Patriots later in the season, and obviously, I mean, the first game with Seattle, of course, was back in September about 15 years ago. But you saw the Patriots in the latter stage of the season, and you saw the Seahawks, obviously, just the end of the beginning of last week. What's your thought on each team as to what makes each one tick based on what you saw in person?
Well, I think Russell Wilson makes Seattle tick, and I was never comfortable with that game when it was 16-0 in the third quarter, when it was a 12-point game with 2 minutes to go. Russell Wilson really makes that Seattle team go. The reason he's not talked about in the pantheon of the very top quarterbacks in the league, I think, has only to do with the fact he's only been around now for 3 years. But he's on the cusp of winning his second Super Bowl, and that's something that Peyton Manning's not done, that Aaron Rodgers hasn't done, that Brett Favre never did. You know, that's the kind of player he is. I think he makes them run. Now, people say, well, Marshawn Lynch, yes, he's a big part of it. And when he gets off on one of those beast mode runs, it elevates both the offense and defense of Seattle. But really, Russell Wilson is the key there. Their defense is good. It's probably, you know, it's the best defense in the league today. There's no question about that. But I really think Russell Wilson is the key to that whole thing. You can score enough points on that defense to win a game. But Russell Wilson generally will get them an extra point or two than you have. See, you know, New England is really good. New England's been the best team in the AFC all season. They're fortunate. The AFC is not nearly as deep in terms of quality teams as the NFC, not even close. But New England's the best of the AFC, and I like a lot of what they did defensively. Browner and Revis are you know, physical, shutdown kind of corners. I think their safeties are excellent. Their linebackers flow to the football well, and they have a very good defense. Offensively, you know, the NFL sends strange messages sometimes, but LeGarrette Blount quits on the Pittsburgh Steelers and gets picked up by the New England Patriots and becomes beast mode for New England, beast mode East, and now he's in the Super Bowl. Boy, that teaches kids a lot of fine lessons, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's incredible. And not only that, but NBC has to request certain guys that they want to talk to in their final conference calls. It's a list of, I think, three, four players plus the coach and the coordinators. Blunt is one of the guys they requested. Okay, fine. That's your choice.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, no, Brady and Belichick, yeah. You know, the thing that Belichick does, he's the best of the business at planning and getting ready for a game. And I know they've had some Super Bowl disappointments. The Giants have denied them a couple of times in close games. But, you know, if anybody's going to out-scheme Seattle, these guys will.
You've gone through Super Bowl weeks yourself, and of course, and today, you know, it's Super Bowl media day, and of course, there's the craziness of that. Is it more difficult in some ways, even when you're with your own team and trying to get ready because of the swarm around them, where it's not a normal week?
Well, you know, I always try to do my kind of like the team try to do my work the week before, yeah. You know, before they go to the Super Bowl, and they just kind of take it all in, you know. So most of my preparation on Super Bowl week was done by then, and it was just kind of taking things in, following the storylines and that type of thing, and I didn't get too caught up into the media push on Tuesday. But Radio Row is one of the great pieces of Americana operating in the Super Bowl city. And all these radio stations from around the country and all doing their shows out of the same room. It's just a phenomenal piece of audio that you hear as you go from one desk to the other. So that's a lot of fun. But I think Super Bowl week for the teams, I can pretty much guarantee you, they've got their major preparation done by now. And they'll basically polish up some things you know, that type of thing during the week of practice.
Yeah, and it's the same thing. I know when I've done bowl games and so forth, you get that stuff done way ahead of time. It's not much is going to change. What's it been like for you working with Rock McCarron?
Oh, you know, he's a man's man, that's for sure.
Oh, if you listen on Sirius, and I've heard you guys on Sirius many times, you get that comes out.
He's nuts and bolts. You know, you don't spend a lot of time small talking with Larry McCarron. But no, he's been great to work with and does a tremendous job. I mean, he's really in tune with what's going on the line and what makes a play work or not work, especially on the offensive end. And I think, you know, we've worked together now for 16 years. I think we've got a feel and understanding for each other. And, you know, I think it's been a very enjoyable relationship in that regard.
Every game takes on its own personality. You're able to ramp up the emotion. Talk about how it plays out for you, the emotion of a game, and the passion that seems to come through in each game as you do it.
Well, you know, Steve, I grew up on the East Coast, and what you try to do is you give every play its due.
Yeah.
But, you know, in this day and age, people don't want their hometown play-by-play announcer getting too excited when the other team makes a great play, even though, you know, like that Dez Bryant catch in the playoff game. I mean, that was an incredible play. Just what a wonderful throw and a great catch.
Yep.
And obviously, on a technicality, it wasn't a catch. But, you know, I sometimes will react to those plays, and people get a little upset with it. But, you know, when it comes to the Packers, for me, it's easy because that's the team I grew up following and watching, and that was my team. So, you know, the emotion of it, that cuts both ways. Sometimes you get a little too critical, you get a little too disappointed when you've got to keep it in perspective and know that you're broadcasting a game and people have to know what's going on. But, no, it's been, for me, a dream come true. I've really enjoyed doing it over these years.
It's an absolute pleasure having you on. Thanks for carving out a few minutes for us, Wayne. It is always a lot of fun to talk with you.
Great talking with you, Steve. Good luck to you and everybody at Penn State.
And Wayne Larrabee, the play-by-play voice of the Green Bay Packers, also heard by many on Westwood One, and truly one of the great professionals in this business. You know, it's fun when you bring someone to the table that has seen both teams and have done so in the past 6 weeks or so, and he's done that. Super Bowl, you know, I'll give you one interesting Super Bowl stat that I found to be interesting beyond words, because, you know, Kevin's done side bets, and we've had fun with that all week and so forth. And tomorrow, of course, you know, Kevin will be lighting candles to see if Jerome gets into the Hall of Fame or not. Which quarterback led the NFL in fumbles this season? Which quarterback fumbled more than any other quarterback in the NFL this season?
The answer? Russell Wilson of the Seattle Seahawks. Now here's the next part. Seattle did not lose one of those fumbles all season. The Seahawks recovered every one of them. How amazing is that in your run? He led all quarterbacks in fumbles this season. And you're 5'11". Your hands are not going to be as big as a quarterback who's 6'5", 6'6", like many of them. I mean, Brady's 6'5". But he led all quarterbacks in fumbles this year. And part of it is, you know, with the read option, the way he moves around the pocket, he carries it loose sometime. The Seahawks didn't lose one of them all year. I find that's remarkable. That's remarkable. Game, I think, will be a lot of fun. I think the game will be close. I think the game will go to the fourth quarter, about as evenly you match the Super Bowl as I can remember in a while. It doesn't matter which team wins. It's not going to be an upset. It's really, to me, a pick'em game. But the Earl Thomas story from yesterday just blew me away. He hurt his shoulder in the NFC Championship game against Green Bay, so he's been nursing the shoulder injury. And they did a media thing on, I think it was Wednesday. You know, they brought certain players out after the Tuesday media day, Wednesday. And he said, how you feel? He says, on a scale of 10, I'm a 10. The next day, he got a call from the NFL. They wanted to test him for HGH. It's unbelievable. And you wonder why we're questioning the image of the league. It's interesting. He's mad. I don't blame him. I'd be mad. Today's show has been brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Stock up for that Super Bowl party right now. Best in imports, domestics, and microbrews, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. From the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. For Kevin Herr, I'm Steve Jones. We'll talk to you Monday right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.